Welcome to the Plant Grow Reap podcast. Hi,
welcome to Plant Grow Reap, the podcast from the team at Aintree Group. And today you've got Andrea and
Julie,
our governance manager. So we're going to be talking today a bit about governance, which is what Julie is responsible for at Aintree Group. She's our governance manager. And we're going to talk a bit about compliance and governance and how those things impact on small businesses and if you don't get it right, what happens, particularly for professional services firms, because it's a pretty serious thing and lots of stuff has changed in the last sort of 18 months about it. But Julie, tell us a bit about, for starters, the project that we started, about 18 months ago now?
Yes. So we identified with the help of the team that we were lacking in the operations team primarily to start with. Documented policies, procedures, checklists, just a way, I guess, to help them better manage their workflow. We already had that established for the accounting team, but there was nothing really in place for the operations. So we decided that we needed something to help us with that. And I think it took a little bit of time when we realised we didn't have the resources internally to bring me on board. And we started a project to identify and document everything for the business.
And governance isn't easy.
No.
Like there's no, you can't go to a website and get like a whole list of what you have to do for governance.
No, there's no one place. There's so many things, and especially in our situation where we have different types of professional services firms, there's different governing bodies and legislation and standards and codes of ethics. And so, yeah, there's no one place you can get all that information of what you should be covering and what the requirements are and how best to meet that.
Yeah. And for the small businesses that might be listening, what does governance mean and what does it encompass as a business owner? Because you've been a business owner too. So,
exactly.
You know, what are the things that you've got to think about?
Yeah, I think for me it helps businesses to sleep peacefully at night knowing that they're covered, that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, all the ducks are in a row and you've got that level of comfort, I guess, that your team also know the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think we went to a conference last year and it was said that sort of policies, procedures, the whole governance gambit, I guess, provides that level of safety within the organisation for employees as well as the owners to know that everything's covered.
Yeah, yeah. And I think most small businesses possibly start with things like HR policies and procedures, which are kind of, they're a bit more documented because we've got Fair Work and resources through those sorts of things, and there's lots of HR, independent HR consultants who put out guides and you know, do webinars, so those things, and you can get software that can pretty much do all of that for you.
Exactly.
But all of the other stuff is pretty business specific, isn't it? So you can't just write an operations procedure. There's some, obviously, so you know, answering phones, for instance, you can write a pretty generic procedure for that, but then there's what phone system do we use, and what number do people call in through, and do we have a voicemail? And so there's all these things, and I think what you and I have realized as we've gone through the process of going from zero written down non-HR policies to how many?
Over 650 now.
Yeah, we've realized that as soon as you start one procedure, you realise that actually there's another procedure that needs to come from that because there's something else.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's no, it's not just, oh, let's write a procedure on how to answer the phones. There's another 10 things that you didn't think about.
Exactly.
And then there's things in that procedure that you went, well, I didn't realise that we didn't have a way of doing that. So for us, it's been, you know, you start one thing and then you open up a giant can of worms and go, okay, there's 50 other things that I have to think about.
So, exactly, yeah.
And what we have realized from our project is that procedure writing is not something that everybody can do or absolutely wants to do. Like some yes people completely don't want to be involved in it and that's fine. But some people try and fail. Mm. And I think it's we've realized that along the way, which is probably not something because our brains kind of work the same.
Exactly.
We didn't realize how hard it was to write a procedure. So yes, small businesses out there, if you're struggling to write procedures for things, that is totally normal.
Like, absolutely,
don't think yeah that you're inadequate and think this is too hard and I'm going to stop doing it, because it's normal for you mm to not get that.
Absolutely.
And it is a big job, like way bigger than what even you and I thought. Like we thought, oh, yeah, maybe 3 months we'll have it all done, and we're now 18 months into the project and we are still adding procedures, yeah, aren't we?
Absolutely. So, and I think that was the biggest learning, that it isn't a natural skill to have that process thinking, to think through. And as you said, we realized there's lots of things that we hadn't considered, but also we uncovered a lot of things that weren't aware of how they were being done.
Mm, yeah.
Which were quite complicated when they didn't need to be, or using systems or workarounds. So we did a lot of interrogation during that process. Yep. It wasn't just, oh, here's a procedure, let's write it down. It was, why are we doing it this way, and how can we do it better at the same time? So I don't think we made it easy for ourselves.
No, we certainly didn't. We definitely did not. We did make it easier for ourselves in terms of choosing the way we do it, though, because
yes
I think a lot of businesses may just start with a Word document and that Word document turns into a giant, you know, doorstop that yeah sits on the shelf and nobody really ever refers to again. And we were determined that we weren't going to do that. But there's lots of ways to do it, but maybe you can just talk through, and this is probably a little bit of a freebie plug to the team that built the software that we're using, because you're the one who set it all up and you're the one who did all the training. Tell us about the product that we're using.
Yeah, well, all credit to you for finding it, but
that was Google. That was not me. That was just a Google search.
We use a online platform called Way We Do, and it is amazing. And preface to say, I'm one of the rare people, I think, that actually love doing procedures and writing procedures. But I absolutely love the system, and I read a report last week talking about setting up procedures in folders and trying to find things. And Way We Do, I just can't imagine doing it that way.
No, not for us anyway.
No, it just wouldn't work, especially with the volume that we have.
Yeah.
And if you're wondering how we've got so many, is we've documented everything that we do, from cleaning the coffee machine through to more complex procedures. So using this system, where we've been able to create policies, procedures, checklists and information sheets that are easily searchable, has been life-changing. They also have AI embedded, which helps us to write the actual procedure.
And that's a reasonably new thing in the system isn't it?
Yeah. It's always evolving, which is also what I love. They're very open to receiving feedback on what's can be tweaked and things like that.
And but what we love about it too is they're Australian.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Which is pretty cool for it a piece of software like this because, you know, there's not a lot of stuff in this space that's useful, and this one is an Aussie company and based in Brisbane, and they've been really good. The good thing about using them is they're really responsive too. So
easy to use. It's version controlled, and the checklists are amazing. They're called activated checklists. So as team members work through them, they need to tick things off. It's all time stamped. You can tell who performed the particular action, which is fabulous. The reporting's really good, and we just started using the acceptance on policies as well, so that we can check when people have read things and we know that. So, and it's a live, living, not sitting on a shelf system. So, yeah, can't speak highly enough of it, and just super easy to use, and the team find it easy to use as well.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think is the most important thing about governance? And
Great question. I think it's, first of all, identifying what you need to be doing. And part of the process of, I might take a step back in just how we approached this project was, first of all, identifying what we needed to capture in terms of the different tasks within the business, which did evolve massively from the initial list of about 15 things we thought we had it covered, for, especially for the operations team. Which now has expanded into probably 500 just for the operations alone. But, just getting the team to identify that. And then, as you said, as we got into things and started documenting, realised how involved everything was and what we needed to know. And just simple things, I guess, a tip for the way that we approached it was as if we were going to be training someone that's never done this particular task before. So writing everything at a really basic level and including directions, for example, on collecting the mail and where the post office is and what the box number is and where's the key and questions and things like that, which I think we've seen benefits from, a massive saving in time with new team members coming on board when we've included all that up front. But I think the important thing is to keep them current, so keep reviewing it. So we have set up a review schedule all through way we do, so that we're regularly reviewing things to make sure that they're current and up to date and meaningful. But also just making sure everybody got involved, even the people that don't particularly like writing procedures or aren't good at it, or it's not what they love doing. We'd find different ways, from getting them to record and through Teams and transcribe that, so that made life a whole lot easier. And another free plug to Tango, which we used quite a lot to capture screenshots for system-based procedures, which made life so much easier.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many different options for the way to do things.
Yeah.
And we started off by writing, you know, typing the procedures as a step-by-step thing, and then realizing that if you were actually doing it at the time, you could screen capture what you were doing and then embed it into. And that evolved as we got better at it. So, you know, our procedures have changed because we went from step by step to popping a video in there. And now we go to the point of, if there's a video from Microsoft that does something that we want, we just put link the link into the original video. So, which we worked out was and it took us a while to work that out as well. Like, why are we videoing the way we do it here? Because what happens when the software changes? Like, what happens when Microsoft does an update and the buttons aren't in the same spots and things like that? So we need to use their systems, because then we can go back to their video and they will update it for us rather than us updating it. So those things, you know, we've learnt along the way too. So it's probably, you know, you can start small, but you'll always, it will always evolve as the software around you evolves. And I think for accounting in particular, the software is evolving so fast, particularly with AI and all of those things, that if we weren't reviewing our procedures, you know, every month, some of them, we would, they'd be completely out of date because, you know, there's a software update for some of our software, you know, weekly. They have weekly updates and stuff like that. So, I guess most small businesses wouldn't necessarily be in the same situation. Like, you can sort of set and forget them a little bit. As long as you're looking at them, you know, every 3 or 6 months, depending on the like gravity of your regulatory bodies and stuff.
And I think another important part of it is the taking everyone on the journey, in including the change management part of it, making sure it's a, we're already doing all these things, they just weren't documented.
And it hasn't, documenting them doesn't change the way you do it. It just means that, you know, now you've got some, if somebody else comes into the role, they already know what to do because you've made a procedure out of it. So you don't have to keep training people. And I think we learned a lot from that part of it as well, because not everybody learns the same way. And so what we were doing in our organization was a lot of hand-holding type training. So someone would sit next to you and walk you through what the procedure was. And then we had feedback from some of our younger team members who said, I actually do not like that sort of training style at all, and it makes me feel really uncomfortable because somebody's watching over me and I don't have time to fail. Like I can't fail because somebody's at my shoulder.
Yeah.
And so it was actually the young people in the organisation saying, no, I just want you to write it down for me and I'll follow those steps, and then if I've got any questions, I can come to you and ask. And at that point we said, okay, you know, the procedure can then be if you've got any questions, we can do a video so that they can watch the video in their own time. They can follow the procedure and then go back to the video if they need to, without the thought of their manager sitting on their shoulder, you know, micromanaging or, you know, making them feel uncomfortable. Because when we started this project, it was post-COVID. So everyone was so used to working in their own little quiet home-based bubble.
Yeah.
And young people especially just had come out of, you know, 2 years of online university where they didn't have anybody watching what they were doing. And it was really confronting for them to have to do that. So it's really changed the way we do all of our training, because we just really don't do a lot of sitting next to people and training them anymore. There's obviously some procedures and processes that have to have a person sitting next to, and the procedures haven't stopped the interaction between the team, because you've been in the office for the last few days and have realised that, like, people still sit next to each other and, you know, go through a process with each other. But the repetitive tasks, we no longer have to do that. And, you know, when we have a new team member start, particularly in the operations area, they go through like 2 weeks of online sort of induction where they have access to the managers and their team, but they don't, that nobody is actually hovering over them to say, are you doing it right? Because as long as they follow the steps, they can, you know, manage it themselves. So it's
exactly,
we've changed that whole way of doing things, which in turn has changed the procedure of how we do.
Exactly.
Our HR inductions have all completely changed as a result of this.
Yeah.
You know, it really has been a big cultural change.
Yeah.
And where there's a big cultural change in a large team, change management is a really big deal.
Absolutely.
So it's required a lot, hasn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And going back to your original question of what's important, why it's important, and what we learned from that as well is that you can't just do a procedure and say read it and leave it at that. It has to have continual reinforcement, referring to it. We get the checklist especially. There's definitely been a lot of hand-holding to help the team refer to it and self-serve.
Yep.
And at the same time as we did this project, we also introduced the intranet.
Yep.
To bring that all together so that we had all the information in one place, linking through to the way we do and everything there as well. So there has been a lot of change, and the team have coped really well with it, because I think they've seen the immediate benefits of the work that we've done in terms of streamlining things. Yeah. And this process has always also forced us to look at some of the things that weren't working, which are working a lot better now. Mm. So I think they've seen, yes, there's been a bit of pain in terms of them having to do this while they do their day job.
Yeah.
But it's also been amazing in terms of the benefits we've reaped with being more efficient, effective, more productive with what we're doing.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty common for businesses to not have operations procedures. They have, you know, really good, competent people doing jobs, but then there's no forward planning about what happens if this person isn't with us anymore.
Yeah.
How do we manage the process going forward? Well, they need to do a 4-week handover.
Yeah.
You don't have the luxury of a 4-week handover these days. Like, that's not how jobs like this work.
Yeah.
You know, you might have a 2-week handover on something, and when you're doing the handover, you are still actually working too. So you've got somebody who is moving out of the role who is doing handover with the person coming into the role, plus possibly moving on to another role themselves and still doing the role that they are part of. So I think from a business improvement situation, just putting even the simplest of procedures in place so that you have a contingency if those things happen is really important. And that was part of our motivation to do it as well, is that, you know, what if people are off sick and you need somebody to step into the role? Like, yeah. Do you know that somebody else knows how to answer your phones? Do you know that somebody else knows how to order the toilet paper and the hand towel and stuff like that? And who's got the passwords to the Woolies account and stuff like that? And small businesses probably, they just think, oh, we've got an office manager or we've got our reception team or whatever. They know what they're doing, which they do, and they do a really great job because nobody ever has to say, we don't have any toilet paper. But what happens when those people move on to something else or when you want to promote them internally? Like, our thought was not what happens if someone moves on from their job. It was what happens when that person gets promoted to another role. How do I train the next person up, and then how do I train that person to do, and how do I get that person to aspire to that role? Because they don't know what the role is because nobody's ever written it down. Yeah, so, that's where small businesses can really benefit from even the most basic procedures. And like you said before, we've got some procedures, policies and procedures that seem really like there's the minutiae, like cleaning the coffee machine. But once we started to write the procedure for cleaning the coffee machine, we actually realized that there's a whole range of idiosyncrasies to do with that coffee machine, which only one person knew how to do in the business. And now, like, anyone can do it. So if Shane wanted to go and clean the coffee machine, not that he drinks coffee, so he wouldn't, but anybody can do it. And we could get, we have, uni students who come in and work with us in roles, and they can easily do those things because nobody needs to handhold them. They can follow the instructions. And those things seem really silly, but they are so helpful when you're thinking about who in the business can do that. Yeah. You know, like, we've got 53 people in our office, and if the coffee machine is dirty, you can guarantee that somebody is going to be like, oh, the coffee machine's dirty. So it is a really important thing. You know, people love their coffee. So and part of the procedure is that it gets done twice a week and everyone knows. So there's no accidental coffee machine situations. So, you know, if I can make any recommendation to a person who is thinking about writing, you know, getting some procedures in, you don't need to use a product like way we do. We chose it because we made the decision to put it all online and stuff. But your Microsoft suite has access to like OneNote and SharePoint and stuff. So you can actually create those things yourself. And that's probably a really good segue into what role does technology play? Like, how have we used technology? And you've been a catalyst for a lot of the technology use. What sort of things should people be thinking about when it comes to governance and risk management and compliance with regard to technology?
Exactly. I think absolutely it shouldn't be a folder on the shelf. It has to be online in whatever format works for you. And it has to be maintained and kept up to date so that it is meaningful for the team to use.
Yeah.
Again, things like AI that are coming into play are making life a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
As we've worked through some of these things, we've explored using different power automates and automations through what we're already using to make our lives a whole lot easier. And as we find all these new things, we're documenting it all the time. So,
I mean, what, three months ago, 4 months ago, we didn't have an AI policy and now we do. Exactly. And basically you and I went to that conference and we heard people, you know, talking about AI and accounting and AI and operations management and stuff like that. And within 24 hours we had a policy, and that was largely because there was an element of it already online, but then you could use AI to create it.
Yeah.
And they taught us how to do that when we were sitting there. We both did a webinar the other week where people they asked a question about who's using AI and stuff, and there are still people out there who are like, oh yeah, it's not really for me. And you know, that just makes us laugh a little bit because it needs to be for everyone.
Absolutely.
Because in this instance, like, there would be people, you could literally be a business owner and type into an AI generator, write me a policy about annual leave, and the AI would write you a policy for it. And you yes. could then just, you know, change it to fit your organization. But you don't need to do any of that manual work. And,
no.
you know, now we have AI in way we do.
Yeah.
And as you said, you can just use the generator. And, you know, the AI generators are becoming smarter. So you can say, I am a compliance manager, write a policy about, and exactly. it will help you with it. So yeah.
So there's really no excuse.
Yeah, no, there's not. Easy. I mean, yeah, I'm too busy. That's the excuse.
Exactly. But it's not only using technology for governance, it's a governance around technology.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we've got so much now around using Outlook and
yeah. Yeah.
Excel and calendar management and things like that. Yeah. So it's making sure your team using the technology appropriately as well.
Yeah.
And the governance around that is always changing, as we mentioned, with not only AI but cybersecurity and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you have to make sure those things are covered off and that you have procedures on how you use your technology as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It's, as you said, you write a policy about something and it brings a policy about something else. It's never this is the nice little box of governance and compliance and risk management. It's not, it doesn't yeah. come in a box, does it? It's yeah, like,
exactly.
There's a million arms that come off it and all the things exactly. you've got to think about. I bet yeah. you didn't think 3 years ago that you would be, you know, you'd know the detailed ins and outs of how Employment Hero works, for instance, or how, yeah. You know, Xero Practice Manager connects with FYI. It's yeah, like, exactly. you know, all of these things have evolved.
Yeah.
And we now have policies about those things.
Yeah.
that we would never have previously thought that exactly. we needed, but we yeah. do, because, you know, we use Teams, and if you don't have a policy about how you use Teams, then it's just open slather. So yeah. you write a policy about it, and then that policy that you think, okay, so now I've got a policy, now I have to tell people like what the, you know, how appropriate use of it, which, you know, it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a big can, it's a giant can of worms, a definitely, very, very giant
definitely.
One.
Definitely.
There's some myths around governance practices, and the first one on my little list, because I'm going to read off this list for a minute, is governance creates more work. Initially, the answer is absolutely yes.
Yes.
There's no doubt yes. about it, because you do need change stuff. As a result of interrogating the way you do things, you will realize that what you're doing is non-compliant with, you know, privacy legislation, because it is changing all the time. So how you talk about it, because you've done a lot of this change management stuff for Aintree Group.
Yeah.
How have we talked about governance and its importance, and that it's not supposed to make everything easier?
Absolutely. I think yeah, the quote that it's not always easier but it will be better is my mantra, for sure. So, yes, you're right. It does create some more work, but the benefits are invaluable. Some of the things that we've uncovered where we were wasting time or resources, it's just been amazing, the differences that we've made with that. And you know, another one is it's going to take too much time, and a lot of the we spend a lot of time getting the team to, while they're training someone, record it. We found ways of trying to incorporate writing the procedure in while they're doing the task. So
yep.
there's definitely, yes, it took a little bit longer, but absolutely worth it in the long run. And you know, another one is that it's for big companies only. But I don't think we can get away with that anymore.
Yeah.
What would you say, as a business owner, the journey's been like for you, and what's come out of it in terms of the benefits that you've noticed? Are you glad that you did it?
Absolutely glad.
Yeah.
Absolutely glad. There's no doubt about it. It has caused a lot of grief and pain along the way.
Yeah.
And the process has been way longer than what I anticipated. Like, you know, what I originally thought might have been a 3 to 6 month project has been much bigger than that. But I think that's because we possibly didn't set a lot of parameters around it to start with, because our goal was to just create exactly what we needed.
Yeah.
We weren't saying to ourselves, okay, this is good enough now. Mm. We have never said that. We've always been like, yep, okay, we've got this many, but now let's focus on these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, from my perspective, it's been a much bigger job. It's not something that I could have done on my own. And, you know, that's partly because our business is much bigger. Like, I think if we were, if it was 10 years earlier, and this is what I would say to people as well, is my recommendation is that if you have the opportunity to start putting these things into place when you are a smaller organization, like when you are, you know, between one and five people, it's going to be so much easier for you to do it than when there's 25 or 55, because the more fingers there are in the pies, the more people you have in different roles in your organization, the more procedures exist.
Yes.
So I would say, you know, absolutely, if you are a small business and you are, or you're a startup and you're just getting set, start with the basics now. Don't think, oh, I can put the HR policies off until I've got, you know, 5 or 10 people. Just get yourself those basic policies in place. The HR side of the policy management is actually the easiest part.
Agree.
Because it already exists in the most part. When we first started that journey, we just went to an external HR consultant and asked them to write us all the policies that we absolutely had to have. And we just ran with those ones. And it's not necessarily the cheapest option, but it actually is the easiest option. So those ones are a given. Like, do not wait. If you, even if you are a solo operator, if you ever in the future plan to have people, just knock that over straight away, because then when you go to employ the first person, the stuff that you give them, they will go, oh my gosh, wow, I did not realize that this company was, you know, so forward thinking. So you're creating yourself as an employer of choice from the very minute that you start to employ. With regard to your operations procedures, absolutely have a procedure about how you send an email. Your branding policy, again, you can AI branding policy, but there are marketing consultants out there, and we're just really lucky to have an internal marketing team and, you know, experts in branding and guidelines for that. And so that is an absolute must as well. Like, don't just go randomly sending emails out to people that have multiple fonts in them and stuff like that. So, you know, when you're talking about governance, it's not necessarily because somebody's got a big stick at you and, you know, saying you must do these things. Sometimes it's just all about your business presence. And those things are, you know, again, you can Google email policy or branding policy and things like that, and you will come up with some stuff, and you can AI those things. So, you know, every procedure that you do, if you've got a repetitive task, absolutely it should be a procedure. We've, you know, you and I have determined that. That was the first things that we did were like, what are our repetitive tasks, and let's write them down. But, you know, small businesses, get yourself a branding policy and procedure about what font you use and what size you use and what email system you're using, so that if you do end up employing somebody, they're not using a completely different system to you. Your email signatures and stuff like that. You don't need to buy a fancy product. You can buy subscriptions to fancy email signatures and stuff, but, you know, just have an email signature, an out-of-office message. Like, these are the stupid things that, you know, we've thought of along the way, is that have a standard out-of-office message so that everybody in your organization is using the same out-of-office message, so that you know that your clients aren't seeing something from Tim that looks like this and John that looks like that, and then there's no consistency because we position ourselves as people – trustworthy people, and to be trustworthy you've got to present a consistent brand. So you know, that's absolutely what I would recommend as a small business owner, is just like think of those things, you know, from the outset. Again, if you type into ChatGPT, what are the 10 operations policies that I should put in place as a small business owner, it will come up with a list of 10.
Yeah.
And then you can tell it to write a policy for each of those things, and you can then, you know, you don't even need to go back and put your name in it, then you can say, I'm a HR coordinator and I need to write a policy for Aintree Group on annual leave, and it will do it for you, putting the Aintree Groups in where it needs to. So it's definitely not now, I would say, even from 18 months ago, it is not as hard now as what it was 18 months ago, because those things didn't exist for us 18 months ago.
Exactly.
So, you know, they're the things, like, yes, it is hard. But one of the myths is that you have to be a BHP or whatever to have governance and risk management in place, and that's not the case. Like, always think about what might happen in, you know, a year's time when you've got employees. What might happen in 2 years' time when you've got that? So if we had have done it earlier and actually written things down the way we should have, but as a small business, you just go about running your business. You don't think about all of these things until you think about them and go, we should do it. And then it's a much bigger project than what you would have had if you'd started. And, you know, ultimately there's people out there who can help you if you are busy running your business and you want somebody to come in and do governance and risk and compliance for you. You can get a consultant to come in and look over your procedures. Again, much easier to do it when you're small than when you're bigger. So, yeah, that's what I would say. Just get on it. Don't think it's for somebody bigger than you.
Yeah.
And I know our audience is, you know, ranges from, you know, people with just a single employee to people with, you know, 30, 40, 50 employees.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, reach out to Aintree Group if you don't know where to start. But there's tons of places out there that you can go and get advice, including Google and AI. So use what the tools will give you.
And I've definitely worked for some very large organisations that procedures haven't been great.
And, you know, but that's the thing. It's better to have a procedure than to have nothing, even if it's a bad procedure. Like it is still better than no procedure at all. But it's going to be a tough job. I think one of the, like, it's not a myth that it creates more work. It does initially, but then it, you know, once you've done it, once it's all in place, then it's just work for Julie, because she's the one who updates it all, and I just am the one who throws things at her saying this one needs to be updated. I'm just making sure we haven't missed anything. That Julie wrote a big list of things that she said we need to cover, so I don't want to miss out on anything. But creating accountability, I think that was another one that was really important to us, is that having a procedure in place gives everybody accountability. So you don't say, oh, that's not my job. Not that anybody did say that at Aintree Group, but if there's things written down, it's very clear about whose responsibility it is in the thing. And we've got checklists that exist for specific roles, and daily, you know, morning checklists and afternoon checklists to make sure that our client experience is as good as it can be. And you don't need to have those things, but it makes it easier, because our team, you know, we have, as I said, some uni students who work with us, and they don't work every day, so they don't have to remember what they did on Monday, because they can just follow the checklist. And they do remember it, but the checklist just gives them a bit of you know, a boost to say, yep, I've done that. And, you know, you can take pride in your work because you've done your checklist. And it might seem, I've always said this as well, the morning and afternoon checklists are two of the checklists that we always had in place from the very outset, because for clients and for visitors to our office, that's the most important thing, is the way our office looks. So, you know, we've got things on that are turn on the TV in the reception, put out fresh water glasses and that sort of stuff. Things that feel like minutia, but it makes it easier for our team. And then if someone is away doing exams or something, the next person who comes in knows exactly what they have to do. So there's no, oh my gosh, have I covered everything?
And that's one of the major benefits, is lightening the mental load of remembering to do things.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's what we talked about this week in with the team as well, is that the more you write down or whatever, the easier life is. And if you can leave at the end of the day knowing that you've ticked off that checklist, you know that you've left it for the person who comes in the next morning in the absolute best way that you can, which is, you know, one of our house rules, best foot forward. So you are always thinking about how what you do impacts the next person, and that's one of those, you know, really important ones is I'm ticking off my end of day checklist, because if for some reason I'm not in the office tomorrow, or I've got an exam and I have to take some time off, or I go away on holidays, which is amazing. You know, when people go away on holidays at Aintree Group, yes, there's a checklist that you have to do.
Yep.
But it helps you because you don't have to remember. So when you've got to try and remember to pack your bathers, you don't have to remember what you've got to do on your last day, because we've created a checklist for you, and all you have to do is open that checklist and tick things off and go, yep, good, I can worry about packing at home. So, you know, they might seem like really insignificant things, but lightening their mental load and letting people actually disconnect when they go home, not having to worry about, did I do that? I can't remember whether I turned the coffee machine off, or I can't remember whether I set the dishwasher off. You know, those things. If you don't have to worry about what you've done after you've locked the front door of the office when you walk out and get to your car, that's great for me because I don't want people going home thinking, oh, gosh, I forgot to send that email, or I forgot to put my out-of-office message on and stuff.
And that's been one of the big benefits, tangible, is that now people can go on leave and they don't come back to a massive pile of work. It's been handled while they've gone. We've got their daily checklist that someone else has easily picked up. They know exactly what to do. And it's just also, you know, just that peace of mind for the team member, but seamless transition in client experience as well.
What else have we learned along the way, Jules? That we wouldn't do it again.
I would, because I love doing procedures.
Anyone who wants to talk about governance, Julie does work at Aintree Group, but she is also very happy to talk to anybody else about governance and, you know, give them advice. I'm just letting people know that they can call you, Jules, and get advice about governance, because there isn't much that Julie doesn't know about what you've got to think about in the first instance. And I think that we wouldn't have been able to do it without Julie. We certainly wouldn't have been able to do it on our own, because we're still running a business and we're still doing all the things we need to for clients. And we recognized pretty early on that we had to have somebody who was not a day-to-day person in the business to be able to manage the whole process, because it did put quite a bit of pressure on the team originally. And even when we did have Julie come in, it was still a lot. So, but again, if we had have been a quarter of the size when we started, it wouldn't have been as much.
Plus having that fresh set of eyes is, why do you do it that way?
Yeah.
Holding you accountable.
Who isn't actually an accountant. So you're not actually, you're not viewing it from the eyes of, this is what you have to do. Like, you were even doing stuff yesterday where Shane was having to say, you know, that looks like that and that looks like this, because it's not what you do. You're just interrogating it rather than doing it.
Exactly.
I think if you're doing it on a daily basis, it's really hard to step back and go, what do I do? How do I do it? Because you just do it instinctively.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that was one of the learnings as well, is it really did help to have someone who wasn't in the day-to-day, because you don't necessarily think, well, do I need to tell people where the post office is and where to get the key? And
absolutely. So we did, when we were doing those ones, we did say you have to, like, everything has to be at Julie, like, for Julie, and she doesn't know any of these things. So if she still doesn't know those things once she's read your procedure, it's a fail. So, you know, and I did, I used that example not with you, but I used it with the team and said, if I'm reading the procedure, you write it for me doing it, because I don't know any of these procedures. So, you know. And that, I think that helped them to change their mindset, that I'm not writing the procedure so that someone can interrogate what I'm doing. I'm writing the procedure so that if Andrea needs to go collect the mail, she knows where the post office is, and she knows where the key is when she, before she goes there. And they're, again, instinctive things people do as their jobs that they don't necessarily think about the detail of that. So,
Yeah, for sure.
If you were to start the project again, what would you do differently?
Great question. I think the biggest hurdle has been identifying people who have the ability to put procedures together would be the biggest one, and put more time into training those who had any sort of aptitude for doing that. Because, yeah, that's probably why it's taken a bit longer, and because there are people in key roles that just didn't have the aptitude for it.
Yeah.
So really important to spend that time up front and getting really clear on what we're trying to achieve and making sure we got the best possible outcome early on in the procedure. And I would definitely use AI.
Yeah.
Now, knowing what we know now, which we didn't have back then.
No. Which is stupid, because it was this project has only been going for 18 months.
Exactly. Yeah.
And now AI, if we started again today, AI would write most of our basic policies. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, that is a big thing. And if you are listening out there and you do not have policies in place, so much easier.
Yeah.
So much easier now.
Absolutely.
And the software. Choose a software and use it.
Yeah.
You know, if it's going to be, please don't use Word. Anyone out there, I love Word. It is not appropriate for you to use Word for your policies and procedures. It is way too hard to manage.
Yeah.
You definitely don't want to have 30,000 Word documents, you know, dotted around somewhere.
Exactly.
Plus you have no, again, another governance thing that you don't think about. You have no control over, really. You don't know who's changed it. You don't know when it's been changed, like, unless you've got all the security set up, and then it defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
So just, you know, try and choose something that you've got already in your suite of software. If you use Microsoft 365, you can use it. Google has the ability to do things. Mm-hmm. I don't use Google, but I know that it has the ability to better manage, not folders, but, you know. And if you can, like, set it up on an intranet. We probably, if we were going to do the project again, may have not even been looking for way we do, because we would have been able to manage it through SharePoint, not as easily, but it would have been an option.
Yeah.
But there are products out there that, and even low cost.
Yeah.
You know, things that you can do.
Exactly.
So
you've just got to make it easy for people to find the information.
Mm.
And it's all well and good to go, yeah, tick, we've done that now, but it's getting people to use it.
Yeah.
Is now the challenge.
Which is still a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting people to use them and keeping on top of that. And I think one of the big things we learned as well was to put why.
Mm. Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
And I
why
think
is this important?
And we've written like 500 procedures before. You and I both went, maybe we should start telling people why we do it this way.
Yeah.
Not just because Julie and Andrea have had a random whim to say, let's put a procedure in place for this. So, you know,
just for fun.
Yeah. It's always just for fun. Procedures are never for fun.
Yeah.
They are to make life easier for people in the end.
Yeah.
So,
and that's another big learning is to include that context. We've had so many procedures where it's just like getting straight into it, but there was no context.
Yeah. Why do we do this?
Yeah.
Why?
Who
why
needs to do it?
Yeah.
Who needs to do it? When do they need
what
to do it?
What do you need in order to be able to do this procedure as well, was another thing that we did not think about early on.
But, and another one that we picked up halfway through as well was, what software do we need to complete this procedure? So that, because we had a couple of occasions where people would start a procedure, then work out they didn't have access to one particular system out of five that they needed. So that was another good tip.
Yeah.
To make sure you think about what are the systems involved in that particular procedure, and make sure the people doing it have the right level of access to that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, advice for people starting their governance and risk management, map it out a bit, you know, write it up on a whiteboard, think about all the things that you, the processes that you do as part of your business, and then, you know, drill down from there. So start off with the big picture and then drill down, because I think if we had have done that to start with, we might have had a bit of an easier road too, and we kind of just jumped into it as you do when you, you know, starting a thing. You probably wouldn't project manage it the way I did, because I was a bit more like, we need procedures, Julie. So, yeah, whiteboard it all out or mind map what you're doing and stuff. It will make it a little bit easier, I think, to do it.
Yeah.
In the future.
Exactly.
Oh, the software links. I'm just looking here. Links back to software help pages. Yeah. Absolutely do that. If you are writing a procedure on how to do your Outlook emails, use the Microsoft training. Don't try and work it out for yourself.
Just reinvent the wheel.
Use what's already there. And then, yeah, the one source of truth for us, bring it all together in an intranet and having everything in the one place so people aren't, you know, one team aren't looking at this stuff and another team are looking at that stuff, because we do have a lot of software.
Yeah.
But everyone goes back to the one place for
exactly,
regardless of what team they're in, they all go to the same place.
I think that's another key thing, is having one source of truth.
Mm-hmm.
So linking to one document and always going back and changing that document.
Yeah.
Rather than having different versions in different places, and it just becomes so swampy and unmanageable. So that has been a key focus that we've maintained throughout, is just having that one source.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably lastly, because I think we've covered everything about procedures and all of that sort of stuff, which we had a few other things to talk about here, but we can always come back to those on another episode. But governance from a holistic perspective, so it's not just about procedures.
No.
The other things that you might want to cover, that people might cover when they're talking about governance and risk and compliance, what are those things? Because that is actually a role now, and the role, you're our governance manager, but the overriding business unit that you run is governance, risk and compliance. So it's all about risk management as well as compliance.
Yeah.
Maybe the last couple of minutes just talking about, from a holistic perspective for all of small business, what do those things cover?
Definitely everything that we've spoken about. Mm. Also that risk element and understanding. So we did include a risk matrix in every procedure on the different levels of risks associated with that and how they're going to be mitigated. And the overarching, I think the most important thing is just building that compliance culture.
Yeah.
And we started this project as a result of updating the values, and our key values were courage, custodian, community, and just making sure that we empower our team to always do the right thing and that we're always thinking about the implications of what we're doing and, you know, not just blindly ticking things off and not doing them. Understanding that everything has consequences and getting the whole team empowered to make sure that we're doing the right thing by each other and our clients and our community. So I think it was a really good timing to do it after we refocused on doing that.
But having
that overarching, we've got a great team, they all want to do a great job and they all really care about what we do, but making sure that, you know, we're always doing the right thing by each other.
Yeah.
And as we said, having all of this in place creates that safety or level of security for everybody that we've got each other's backs and, you know, things are going as they should be and everyone can, as I said, sleep peacefully knowing that everything's covered.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good note to finish on, that, you know, what you're doing when you do a governance, risk and compliance project is creating a safety, not just for your clients and for your business, but for your team, because everyone knows that everything's been thought of.
Exactly.
And that you've got everyone's back, and it's easy to, not necessarily easy, but it's, there's a logical process behind things.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's all, for us, definitely all about our community and being custodians. That's one of the biggest things that we talk about with the team when they came up with these values, that, you know, we are custodians and we need to keep our community safe. And our community doesn't just include our clients, because, you know, we absolutely have to make sure we keep them safe, but our team as well. So, Thanks so much, Jules.
Thank you.
It's been this is a big topic.
It is.
Yeah,
it
yeah. Is we could talk topic. About it for days and days and days, I reckon, you and I. So maybe we'll come back on another episode and talk a bit more about the various areas we might not have gone into today, like when you do, you know, internal audits and stuff like that, because those things are our next step. know, really drilling down into who's following procedures, why they might not be, and that. So, yeah, great. We'll come back at another time and chat about those things.
Awesome.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks, everyone, for listening.